FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. Today is May 2nd, 2017. Well, economy, Trump, can he get his agenda through Congress? That remains yet to be seen. It's going to get nasty in D.C., even nastier than it is now, and it's going to be a war within the same party, within the Republican Party. But how is that going to affect you? How is that going to affect the economy and your prospects in it? We've got Andrew Zatlin with us of MoneyballEconomics.com. Andrew, welcome back.
Pleasure as always, Kerry. Hi, everyone.
Hey, so look, we got an economy that appears to be slowing. Perhaps it's going into recession, perhaps not. What is your economic crystal ball, Carnac? Tell us.
Yes, I actually see good things going forward, but I think we're in a reality check zone here. And let's look in our mirror. Let's look backwards in time a little bit. 2016, it was a terrible year of transition. You had the first half of the year, companies were cutting hiring. I mean, if you remember, we were down in the single digits for hiring at one point.
Yeah.
Inventories were being slashed. As we started to approach the third quarter, as we started coming through the summertime, my favorite bellwether companies, the semiconductor companies, were coming out and saying, we've gone too far. The pendulum swung too far. Our customers now are too lean, and they're going to come to us for inventory. And guess what? We have successfully pulled back our capacity and our supply. So when they come to us, we're going to be sitting in the catbird seat and we're going to raise prices. So in essence, the second half of the year was a zig to the zag. Everything got too lean. The world didn't fall apart. And all of a sudden, demand was steady, but the supply was too lean. So we had this, what I call destocking, restocking wave. Now, again, let's go back in time a little bit. A lot of things happened all at once, a lot of very bullish waves. So while this destocking shifted into restocking, we had oil reflation going on. So all of a sudden, commodity prices started to go up. On top of that, on top of those two big waves that were very visible, you had the Chinese coming in. And again, I don't know if folks are watching China, but what the Chinese economy is doing right now is very similar to where we were. They're about to have their Lehman moment where the entire economy is depending on debt, and not just a little debt. The Chinese People's Bank of China has gone from pumping money at a 10% year-over-year clip to almost 25%. And they're keeping it up at that 20-something plus rate of growth. I mean, they're throwing money and it's just not doing anything, except they're gambling with it. You have a lot of speculation. So sure enough, this hot money, they went from hitting the brakes to hitting the gas again. So in the fourth quarter, this hot money spills over and that adds to commodity pricing going up again. Not that the demand is there, but just that the speculation is there. So you got three waves that are pushing up a lot of inflation, a lot of demand activity. So you've got a combination of real demand, like the suppliers are saying, look, we've got demand coming back online because the inventories got too lean. And then you've got this artificial kind of OPEC type of, we're going to create inflation just by manipulating pricing. And that's coming boosted by the Chinese demand as well. And then on top of that, you've got an election. This is the fourth wave. The election was kind of one of those waiting to exhale moments. A lot of it was definitely, you know, one party's going to push things in one direction, one party's going to push things in another direction. Once we get through that, we've got clarity. And then things start to move forward again. Some of that pent-up demand gets released. All these things are happening. And then you've got a guy coming in who's going to be president who's talking Keynesian fiscal stimulus. You know, we're going to cut taxes. I'm going to throw $1 trillion at infrastructure. You know, wow, did the markets love everything they're seeing. Why wouldn't they? Now, the reality, though, is a lot of these waves have crashed and burned. Let's go in order. Let's go in reverse order. We've got the Trump wave. Well, I think we've seen that Trump can't get anything through this Congress. We've got a Main Street meets the Beltway problem. And so you're not really seeing anything in the way of this Keynesian throw money at the problem type of opportunity. We've got the Chinese stimulus has slowed down starting in January. So now all of a sudden, if you look at commodity prices, literally, like almost the day after they stopped throwing money out there, you've got a drop in you've got a drop in iron ore prices and all these other major commodity prices. The easy money's gone, the hot money's gone. So boom, the supply isn't there. So the demand isn't there. So naturally, prices come down. So that's the second wave that's crashed. You've got the end of that election, you know, kind of waiting for something to materialize. supplies. That's the third wave that's crashed. And then we've got this, you know, the destocking, restocking wave. Well, it doesn't take more than a quarter or two to realign your inventory. So what I'm talking about is by February, all the data that I was looking at was saying we're looking at a rollover. That call it a pause, call it a rolling over of sorts, but basically the supply chain said, nah, there's nothing really here. And then you've got the oil, the fifth wave that we talked about. Oil prices coming back down. We're under 50 bucks again. And again, all this gets back to one fundamental market law. If the demand is there, you'll see it. If it isn't, then you can't keep the prices up as much. This is why inflation hasn't really moved forward as much as the Fed wants. So we've got the situation where economic activity, by the time we got to February, started to slow down. And that's why a lot of why the GDP started to, you know, what we were at 0.7%. Now, coming into this quarter, a couple things are going to take hold. The world hasn't fallen apart. We don't have as much activity as we expected, but we still have a lot of activity. I think Germany's starting to accelerate a lot more. So is Europe. China's stumbling again, because again, this is just, you know, the crack cocaine of liquidity is over. They're waiting for another hit before their economy goes up. But if you look at their GDP, no matter how much money they're throwing at the problem, and they're throwing just so much money. I haven't looked at the latest amount of their foreign reserves holdings to take a look at how they're trying to protect their yuan. But they're not in a good place. And it's not moving the GDP. It's not, I mean, their PMIs are barely above 50, which means their actual economic activity is, you know, they're somewhere in quicksand, sinking a little bit, but their head's above water. The U.S., meanwhile, is, you know, sort of a steady as you go. I think because they measure GDP quarter over quarter, you're going to have a little bit of a reversal in Q2. And I don't just say that because, you know, you go too far to one side and then you've got a rebound the next month and the math plays into that. I'm looking at the actual hiring going on, and this is where things get me excited. Not a lot gets me excited, Kerry, but this gets me excited. You know, I'm seeing companies hire. And you're talking about, again, let's go back to where we were. Last year, companies were so defensive. I mean, payroll suddenly started to slow down really fast, cutting inventory. I mean, and if you listen to the earnings calls, most companies will still say, you know, we are in cost control mode. So you take that cost control mode way of outlook, and then you take a look at the fact that they're trying to hire again on a much more, you know, firm base. And they're only going to hire, I believe, if the order flow is coming in. So I think, you know, now that we're in April, new quarter, and the first quarter is usually messy anyway. And especially, you know, nowadays with China playing such a big role in things, you know, a lot of companies sit there, you know, just look at the human nature of it all. People come back from vacations. It's January. You know, now they're going to start interviewing, hiring, or starting to get their annual plan together. Oh, but wait, China's got their Lunar New Year. Let's hold off. Okay, wait, it's the end of the quarter. Let's window dress. You know, you really don't actually put your plan of attack into action until the March, April timeframe anyway. You know, okay, we're going to go out. We're going to start building a factory, weather permitting, right? So really, this month, April, is the month where we would normally just start to see a lot of this action. And when I look at the hiring numbers, I'm very impressed. I'm seeing that companies, you know, we're not in a place, I guess what I'm trying to say is we're not in a place where there's forward investment, where companies are rolling the dice and willing to take a risk. At the same time, the Trump rhetoric didn't get companies to extend themselves very much either. So they didn't buy into the Trump rhetoric of, you know, everything's going to be great, you know, believe in me and start investing. And so they didn't get overextended. So it's not like, okay, we hired all these people already, and so now we don't need to hire for the rest of the year. Instead, I think companies were very smart. And I'm basing this off of the earnings calls that I listened to. Most companies, you know, were thumbs up on the rhetoric. They love the optimism, the sentiment, but it isn't necessarily driving order flow. So they're kind of dismissing the Trump thing out there to say, that's great. It's nice to have an administration that's positive about business, but we're not really seeing any traction, any detail. So we're not going to manage our investment that much according to some promises. And again, let's go back to April and why that's meaningful. It's the start of the new quarter. But I think also when you look at the honeymoon period that you have for a new administration, they got past the honeymoon period. They got into April. We're talking companies and CEOs.
Right.
And maybe they've been holding back some of their investment. You know, I think, for example, if I look at healthcare, what's interesting is I saw enormous hiring in the healthcare industry in April versus in the first quarter, they were one of the weakest performers. If you look at payrolls for healthcare, no hiring. I mean, they just went from like 40 to 50K payroll growth every month to 20. You know, just like almost nothing. Well, because there was a threat that the ACA was going to get overturned and no more Obamacare, and that would throw their whole business plan into, you know, some kind of downward spiral. Boom. End of March, there's no overturning, no repeal. They're back into action. So again, you've got this 6-month period. The honeymoon's over. I've got to invest. I don't have clarity about what Trump is doing, but that in and of itself is clarity. If Trump isn't going to deliver the goods and it's already April, he can't affect my year anyway, is what a company CEO is thinking. They have to take action by March. It's already deep in April. They started to do their spending plans now, ignoring a Trump effect, which is okay, right? You know, they're not ignoring it and saying it's never going to happen. They're simply saying for 2017, Trump really isn't going to be much of a factor, the fiscal policies of a Trump. You know, if he can put a tax plan in place, that's great, but it won't affect consumer spending this year. If he can put some kind of investment plan in there in the tax plan that affects my capital spending, that's great. But again, it's not going to affect 2017. It's already May. There's nothing Trump can do at this point that will impact my business. So with that in mind, let's move forward. And I think that moving forward is what you're going to see in April. And I think it's going to actually accelerate through the quarter. But again, it's like a little mini wave. It's more, again, that pent up demand. Some companies were on the sidelines, kind of not sure, should I spend it or not? Should I hire or not? They'll do that in the second quarter. My concern is the second half of the year where we get that. That uncertainty enters the picture again. All right. What can a Trump administration put on the table that will affect business?
Andrew, what about the geopolitical situation here? We've got Korea. Things are on edge there. North Korea. We've got Iran. We've got still got wars going on. Syria. How does this impact anything here? This figure into your
numbers? You got to be long aerospace and defense stocks, baby. I mean, that's how it infects you. The number one area where you would want to put money is whoever's in the drone space, whoever's making those drones, because that, if you look at the military budget, and it could change under a Trump administration where the money goes, but largely just broadly speaking, the only growing sector in the military budget is drone spending. And it makes sense why. I mean, you're talking drones are, you know, thousands, tens of thousands of dollars at the military level versus a pilot and a plane, and you're talking tens of millions of dollars. And the scale, the number of drones you can get out there, the cost, the efficiency. I mean, you've got something that can fly for 24 hours. Drones are where you put your money, but just in general, Navy, you know, the ability to project power you have, you know, you got a guy who was like, you know, why are we going off into places of the world where we shouldn't be? And now we've got a much more traditional Republican policy in place, regardless of who the figurehead is at the top. You know, let's go out, be militaristic. And so you've got these geopolitical incidences. And I'm sure there's a way to explain why we're picking a fight with North Korea, right? I mean, it cuts in a lot of ways. Obviously, North Korea provides Iran with a lot of destabilizing nuclear and ballistic missile intelligence. It's also a way to rattle China. And yeah, look at how we're basically ignoring China. You know, you're talking before Trump came aboard, China literally went up to the Philippines doorstep and took one of our submersible crafts, and we didn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is China basically provoking us and saying, you're a paper tiger, U.S. Well, now under Trump, you've got a totally different message. And it's definitely geared to China. It may be less geared to Russia. But, you know, you've got the 59 missiles launched at Syria while the guy's there. It's his dinner. It's his dessert break. You know, hey, guess what? I've got a present for you, you know, Chairman Xi. And then you've got us installing a defense system in South Korea. You know, China's saying, how dare you? And we're saying, well, yeah, whatever. What are you going to do? Oh, you're going to test some weaponry? We're scared, China. Wow. You're going to test some weaponry. You've got Israel, which has tested the U.S. weaponry, the missile defense shields, in actual warfare, not practice, but in an actual war zone with both Hezbollah and Hamas attacking them with tons of missiles. And this is U.S.-Israeli technology at play. And it worked great. It was fantastic. Mm-hmm. So the U.S. can sit there and say, China, whatever you think is going to happen with your beta testing, we've got real-world experience with our stuff. So we're not really worried about you. So you've got a pushing back right now, a projection of power. What does that do to us? Well, economically, I mean, like I said, aerospace, military, I'm not sure if it goes beyond that. I mean, what do you think?
Well, what I'm thinking is that those missiles, three in a row, failure to launch.
North Korea's a puppet country. It's a ridiculous country. You know, I mean, what's interesting to me is why North Korea? I mean, are they a linchpin? I know there's a lot of, look, everyone knows what Iran's doing. They're in a race to get the bomb. You look at what happened with Gaddafi under Obama and you shake your head and you're like, wow, if you could have failed more miserably, I'd be surprised. And what I mean in that is you had a guy in charge of a country that was also walking towards nuclear weapons. And we said to him, give us your nuclear weaponry, give us your capability, and we'll invite you back into the world of countries. And he did. And guess where he landed? You know, dead in a bunker, you know, shot and just horribly treated. Now, if you're Iran and if you're looking around the world, you look at North Korea and you say, wow, these guys have a nuclear bomb. And look what Clinton did. Clinton went out and just threw stuff at them. Okay, so having a nuclear weapon protects you from a Gaddafi situation. You give it up. Yeah, right. Having a nuclear weapon gets you into a North Korea situation where both China and the U.S. are reluctant to do much. So we absolutely know Iran's going there. Never mind what they say. We know they're going there. Everybody knows they're going there. But, you know, we wanted a couple $100 billion of their money. And Obama had his own reasons, you know, and we'll find those out in a few years. He'll be the Carter of our era where people look at him and go, your intentions were good, but boy, were you stupid.
I don't even think his intentions were good, but that's a story for another day. Let's go back. There was no reason to take out Gaddafi. He was cooperating. He'd purportedly given up on his nuclear ambitions. So they just did it for whatever reason, whether he was going to abandon the petrodollar, who knows why. Clinton seemed to have had it in for him, and Obama went along for the ride.
She hated the fact that he had Amazons as his bodyguards, right? Yeah, well. Look, what happened was we sent a clear message to the world. If you play ball with us, you're screwed. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's a really, you know, look at what we did with Ukraine. If you play ball with us, you lose the Crimea. Oh, yeah. Okay. You know, I mean, under Obama, our foreign policy was just miserable. And I use Carter as the example. We showed everyone, given the chance, we'll be a paper tiger. And the clock was running out. And we can talk geopolitics for a second. The clock is running out. And I think the smart people of the world think the following way. At some point in time, the U.S. is out of Iraq. The U.S. is out of Afghanistan. We're out of places that have just dominated our mind share. Yeah. And once we're out of those places, Afghanistan and Iraq, our attention turns now to much more real problems that really affect us. And that's where we're in that transition right now. That's what Trump really represents is, you know, we've been over 15 years in Afghanistan and Iraq. Why?
What have we accomplished in that time?
Yeah, and the foolishness of the Obama administration to say, I mean, look, if I was in a negotiation with Iran, I would say, wait, let me see if I've got this straight. You are Shia. You are not well regarded by the Sunni world. You're also Persian. You're next door to a lot of Arab countries. You guys don't have a tradition of a lot of warmth. And then you've got this group called ISIS, which is hardcore ex-Iraqi general Sunnis who don't like you, and they're taking up Syria. It sounds like ISIS is your problem, right? Because they're on your doorstep, and they're going to start messing with you really fast. We shouldn't have been saying, please help us, Iran. We should have been saying, what are you going to do for us helping you? So this is kind of the naivete. This is like the basic ignorance of the last administration. So going forward, we've got a new administration that tends to have let's take a step back even further, if I can, Kerry. The last administration was formed by bureaucrats, by lifelong politicians and bureaucrats. And so for them, foreign policy was not something they had experience in. That was reflected. For them, you also didn't really have business experience. That was reflected. The great comment, you didn't build that business. You know, what? Excuse me, Mr. Obama. I understand what you're trying to say, but, it takes a village kind of a thing. But let's face it, it still takes entrepreneurship. I look at today under Trump and I look at the people who are in charge. These are billionaires. They don't need more money. They're not spending their time top to be as corrupt as Hillary was trying to get $400 million. That's not their objective. Ego's in there, I'm sure. But these are people who know how to run organizations. These are people who have built companies with thousands of people. Someone who's going to come into the VA and say, what is our mission? What are our targets? How are the resources deployed? These are people who know how to run organizations. In fact, I would say this is almost a culmination of an Atlas Shrugged moment where you've got the leaders of our economy coming in and saying, oh man, can we do a better job here? Now, what that means is the social programs will be terrible, right? They're not going to have a good track record of being soft people who are going to be warm and fuzzy. But when it comes to understanding the self-serving motivations of our so-called partners and our competitors, this is their meat and potatoes, man. These are the folks who know how to signal, who know how to show what really is going to happen. These are the guys who know how to do this stuff. And I really have a lot more confidence in our foreign policy and in our economic policy with these folks up there. I'm disappointed in the Beltway. I'm disappointed in politicians getting their hands there. But I think overall, we have the right hands on the tiller for the problems that are coming down, which is, we're 9 years into the economy. right, into the cycle. It's definitely not on the upswing, right? So you want folks who know how to manage as we go down the economy, because the economy will be an issue for the next few years. Foreign policy, as we manage this transition away from Afghanistan and away from Iraq, and we start to look out there, our competition, look at this as a business. Our competition is Russia, which is a failing power dependent on oil. They're fading, but they're not going down without fighting. That's why they took Crimea. That's why they took Syria. This isn't just hubris. This isn't just a Putin saying, you know, let's recover the old Russia. It's in a few years, I won't have the opportunity to recreate these buffer zones and these power positions, because America will be ascendant. They'll be out of this time-wasting, money-wasting excursion in the Middle East, and they'll be a lot more lean, to use a business example. You know, they're a lot divesting the bad stuff from the business and getting more focused again. That's why Russia's acting now. That's why China's acting now. And I think we're in a transition stage in the world where America's going to be leaner and meaner in a lot of ways. And I do like the idea that we've got people. This is just inevitable, regardless of who's in charge. I just like the fact that the people in charge have a lot better real-world experience at how these things, at real geopolitics, not beltway politics, not the nonsense of all these other issues that have been held up as priorities. They know what the priorities are. I call it sloppy thinking. I look at the Democratic Party and I shake my head and I go, why can't they get their act together? On the one hand, they act like a trust fund baby caring. And we're going outside of economics here, obviously.
Yeah.
But you've got a trust fund baby mentality, which says the money's always there, and so I'm going to dole it out and however I want, in entitlements. Okay. But the trust fund baby's been dipping into the principal too much. The Democrats, on the one hand, want to give out entitlements to anybody and everybody who comes along. Hey, free education, why not? You know, but they're not paying attention to the bank account, and they're not taking actions that protect the bank account. So on the one hand, yeah, hey, do whatever you want, you know, spend the money wherever you want as if it's never going to end. On the other hand, you've got the acceleration of globalization and NAFTA and all these programs that have effectively moved the core of the economy offshore. Well, you can't have it both ways. You can't undermine the economy on the one hand and then give away more money on the other.
Yeah,
and it's just
something has to give.
Flock.
Something has to give. There's a limit. And we've reached our limit. So, Andrew, MoneyballEconomics.com, best place to find you.
Yeah, MoneyballEconomics.com. Come on over. Or apparently I might have to be politics, MoneyballPolitics.com, yeah. Given our conversation today. Let's get rid of the sloppy thinking.
Yeah.
You know?
Well,
let's take it back.
You know what Will Rogers said? Ignorance got us into this mess, and ignorance will get us out.
Exactly.
All right, Andrew. We'll talk to you again soon. Be well.
Thanks for having me, Kerry. Happy investing, everyone.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.